Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Hello and welcome to Text Message. I'm Nate Langson.
And I'm Ian Morris.
Now, this is a special Mobile World Congress episode. We just wanted to go over some of the stuff from the show that neither of us actually attended, but still nonetheless have fully formed opinions on. We're going to do this as something as a bonus episode. Ian and I decided to record this just one evening in the week because we want to. And we wanted to give you guys something a little bit extra so we didn't have to spend all of the weekend show coming up talking about Mobile World Congress and gadgets and things you might already be well aware of by next weekend. Our Patreons who are supporting us at patreon.com/UKTech will of course be getting this a little earlier than everyone on the free feed, but hopefully everybody will also enjoy it all the same. So Ian, let's start, shall we? Let's talk about the LG G6. Now, this was sort of, by a lot of people's standards, it was the standout phone of the show, certainly in terms of the fact that Samsung made no show in terms of announcing a phone, sort of, at their show. And you wrote about it. So what did you write about it?
I did. I got to see a little bit early. So there's a lot going on here. LG previously had sort of gone all in on having a modular smartphone, which I thought at the time was a really good idea. I could see that having a real future because, you know, the idea of you can bolt extra modules in feels like a really smart idea. But no one bought it. So they've basically had to go all in on doing... I don't want to be uncharitable to LG, but this is essentially exactly the same as the iPhone and the Samsung Galaxy, and you know, all of those phones and even the HTCs, they're all very similar devices in terms of the look. Now, LG has, to its credit, done something a little bit different, and there's plenty about this phone that you'll love, and it's gone for a very odd screen ratio. Now, I've forgotten exactly what it is, but it's
18 by 9.
That's right, yeah.
So it's a little wider. And it reminded me of LG, one of their very, I mean, this is going back to about 2008 or so, maybe 2009. They released a phone that had an aspect ratio of something ridiculous, like, you know, 25 to 9. Like, it was an extremely long, like, ultra-wide screen that I think you and I might have gone to the launch for. So LG sort of got a history of experimenting with aspect ratios in this way.
Yeah, and I think it's quite a good idea in some ways, because I think it takes the phone into a new sort of holding it in your hand. It's long and thin. So it makes sense for a normal human being, because we've all got hands which are, you know, able to access things in a sort of certain range, and your thumb can't reach across a very wide phone. Having said that, because it's tall, it means that your thumb's got further to go up and down the length, so perhaps it's actually no easier at all. But
specs-wise, it's a pretty high-end phone, I believe, isn't it? And it's got the new Google Assistant, which is one of the first non-Google Pixel phones to have Google Assistant.
Yeah, LG made a big deal of that, but I believe that Google's now announced it's coming to all Nougat phones.
I think it's coming to loads of them for sure. I think the LG, just the timing of the LG means that this one is getting it first, even though we don't actually really know when it's going to be available or how much it's going to cost. But we're assuming, certainly by the looks of it and the specs we know of it, this is going to be sitting at the high end. This is going to be the chief rival to the Samsung S8, which we'll talk about in a little bit. Certainly the chief rival to the iPhone 7 and the Sony that we're going to talk about also shortly.
And also bear in mind, like the Huawei as well, you know, photography is a big thing here.
The P10.
Yeah, exactly. And but I do want that. There's two very interesting things. LG's gone really in on photography in terms of features that you would normally find on pro video and stuff like that. Like the camera's really good and has focus peaking, which I found really unusual, and enables you to find accurately a focus point, and it will show you on the display in a bright color. But also Dolby Vision. It's got Dolby HDR built in, which makes it one of the first phones to have not only HDR, the Note 7 had it, but also Dolby, which is very rare.
Do you want to remind us briefly what HDR is? Because that's something that's been coming to TVs as well.
Yeah, exactly. High dynamic range. LG's obviously led the charge with it. And it means that you can get a lot more of the range into the picture. So very dark, very light. It can all be included, and you'll see a lot more detail. It also does a lot for color. So it's good. It's a good thing.
It's a complementary feature to 4K and HD in the sense that it's more about the numbers and types and ranges of colors and shadow makeup that you can get, as opposed to just being purely... It's a bigger picture and there are more pixels. They're better pixels in that sense.
And it really only requires that Netflix and Amazon update their mobile apps and they're good to go. So it's ready. That was a problem in that I don't believe that they ever did update their apps for the Note 7. I mean, obviously the Note 7 didn't last very long. So I think that there needs to be a sort of real push towards those apps being updated. Otherwise, all of this is useless.
Now, you mentioned the Huawei P10, and that's the one that's got the two cameras on the back, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, they did this last year, but I think from what I've seen, they've improved again, and people actually seem really upbeat and excited about it.
Yeah, it's similar to the iPhone 7 Plus in that, for what I've seen, it's got two cameras on the back and it's able to create a more realistic sense of depth in photographs. The iPhone 7 does it with a combination of having two different types of camera as well as some software tricks, and Huawei is doing it too. And I saw a really interesting comparison between the two models, the iPhone 7 Plus and the Huawei P10, on The Verge this week, and it seems that while Apple's is more convincing in very good lighting conditions, convincing being closer to what you'd expect out of a DSLR camera in terms of blurred backgrounds and things, it seems that the Huawei is much better performing in lower light. So it's going to be a fun one to test a little bit Go on.
I was going to say, I have a little bit of an issue with the iPhone in low light these days, because I think, and I'm not a sensor expert, but my understanding is that perhaps Apple's move to a slightly higher resolution sensor, coupled with the software enhancements you find on things like the Pixel, have meant that the iPhone does look a little bit comparatively bad in low light. Now, the Pixel is a league apart, but that is only software. In fact, the Pixel has a ridiculously slow lens, like it's an f2.0, whereas the iPhone is an f1.8.
It's a lot better than they used to be, though. But
I get a lot of hassle for this, because I say that camera on that Pixel shouldn't be any good. It defies logic, but it is good because it's software.
It's one of those things where they came out and at the time they said, this is the best camera in the world, hands down. And that's the kind of claim that's easy to sort of disprove. But yeah. I've used the Pixel for a long time now, and I've used it side by side with an iPhone as well. And the iPhone, I think it takes the better picture in good light, but the Pixel still definitely has the edge in low light.
Yes.
Anyway, let's not get too distracted from MWC.
No. But one thing that wasn't related to MWC, did you see the Oppo? That has a periscope style optical zoom lens that's built along the phone. It's incredibly clever, but again, a good year for photography, I think.
I think for mobile phone photography as well, and I still believe that it won't be too long before we do have lenses that you can attach and deattach to a camera. You know, miniature versions of what you see the Canon and Nikon guys fixing to the front of their cameras. I can see whole miniature ranges of those coming into being in some form and being a real market for accessory makers everywhere. You know, we've seen clip-on fisheye lenses, but I think it's going to happen before too long that we have more lens options, detachable lens options on our phones. Let's talk a little bit about the Sony X Z Premium or XZ Premium to our American friends. This is a phone that, in terms of pure specs, beats all the others that we saw. It has the bigger battery marginally. It has a very high-end screen, similar to the G6. It has an extremely fast processor. It's got great RAM, great memory. It's, you know, Sony's Android experience, personally, is among my favorites. I know a lot of people won't agree with that, but it's my favorite of the bunch.
I think the Xperia phones are popular amongst those who own them. Like, you won't find an Xperia owner who's desperately unhappy with their device, actually. It's quite interesting.
Yeah. Now, what did you think to the Sony phone? Because this Sony has a tendency to never be talked of as, you know, the phone to get. It's sort of one for the Sony faithful. But in terms of keeping pace with everybody else, it's very good. And it has something like a 960 frames a second slow-mo mode, which again means that photography and the camera is the differentiating factor in these phones, yeah. Other than the physical design. The Sony's have always been a little different.
It's interesting. I mean, the Sony camera phones aren't ever as good as they probably should be, given that Sony makes phone or camera sensors and is actually an expert. Like, Sony's little cameras are really, really good. One of the things about LG that I find quite interesting, they're very good at understanding what the advantages of each thing are. So, for example, you won't get an OLED in the LG phone, but LG is a world leader in OLED. So the reason for that is that they don't think it's the right thing for that phone. So I don't know the ins and outs of the thinking of LG itself. I can only, you know, like guess about it, but yeah, so I assume they made a judgment call and felt that they didn't need to go for the high end, and they'll probably save money doing it, and LG is not exactly flush for cash.
No, I mean, the A35 is the top-end Snapdragon. They only announced it in, like, December or maybe November last year, I think. And it's the one that there was some talk, I believe, that Samsung had some exclusivity on, which isn't true because it's in the Sony here. Yeah. So it's kind of, you know, it's the cutting edge. The cutting
edge. Samsung won't probably be using those processors in it most of its range anyway, because it tends to have this split personality where it does everything except the US is an Exynos, and the US is a Qualcomm because they have to support those CDMA networks, which Qualcomm obviously basically invented.
Yeah. So out of the, just to sort of semi-conclude on the phone stuff, we've got the Sony X7, which is Sony's flagship. You've got the LG G6, which is obviously LG's flagship, and we've got the Huawei P10, which is Huawei's new flagship. Out of those three, which is the one that makes you the most excited?
That's a really good question.
Thank you.
I don't know. I kind of am excited by the LG. I don't think that I'm necessarily... if I was going to spend my own money... that doesn't clear it up for me, actually. I think I'd probably get the LG, I think.
Yeah. I'd probably get the LG as well at this point, but that's also before having used any of these three models in my own hand.
I've got to say, I've got the P9, and it's really good.
The P9 was always a fantastic phone.
Really good. I don't think it sells anywhere near as many as it should, because it's a great phone, and it probably won't be as expensive either. And it's actually the same as probably true of a Sony. I think that's three phones. You could buy any one of them and be happy.
I wanted to talk a little bit briefly about nostalgia. We'll talk about this again in a bit more detail, actually, on the weekend show. But there were two products that really made me feel like the revivalist of the 1990s spirit was in full force at Mobile World Congress. On the one hand, as everybody predicted, including ourselves, the Nokia 3310 was relaunched in a new form. And also, much less common to everybody, but probably the thing I was most excited about from the whole of Mobile World Congress was a Palm Top computer called the Gemini. And if anybody was a massive nerd like I was in the 1990s, you'll remember Scion as being the geek's device of choice. It had a ergonomic keyboard. You could type with two hands on it. It folded up with a hinged screen and fit in your pocket. It was a wonderful piece of technology. You could word process. You could email if you had an adapter. You could do all kinds of things on it. I had one. I adored it. And then I saw that a company is relaunching sort of a spiritual successor to the Scion called Gemini. and it was being shown off at the show. They were backing it. They were launching it on Indiegogo. They reached their funding goal for it this week, and it's been designed in part by one of the original designers who worked on the original Scion series. So there are lots of real tangible connections to it, except it's returned as a much more high-end device. It's got a really, it's got like a 10-core MediaTek processor, 4 gig of RAM. It'll run a version of Ubuntu or Linux. It's got a front-facing camera for video calling, but it's also got what looks like the trademark Scion keyboard. So it's a very exciting product. And for our Patreons on our $5 and up level, I wrote this week's weekly column about this and about the Scion and why I was so excited about this. So if you are backing us at that level, do check that out and give it a read for more detail. But this was something that I thought really helped underscore part of Mobile World Congress this year, which is two of the most exciting products were two that were essentially rebirths of things popular in the 1990s, and they were more exciting than any of the high-end black slabs from LG, Sony, and Huawei that we've talked about so far.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm like you. I can sort of see the vestige of a good idea in the Gemini. I sort of feel like maybe there is a gap in the market that could, you know, they could fill just to give you some sort of portable device that's not a tablet, not a phone, but sort of does a bit of both. I mean, I imagine it's going to be expensive and a niche product, just by virtue of the fact that it's a small production, I guess.
It's going to cost about $350.
It's not unreasonable, is it?
But upwards. And I think they were the prices for the early backers, and it might be more expensive once it hits shelves. So it might be about $500 or so. So we're talking close to the price of a high-end phone. Yeah. But one of the versions of it does have 4G and it does run Android. So it might be terrible. I'm not vouching for it being any good, but I am vouching for the fact that it's very exciting and nothing exists like it currently. And yeah, so that got me hot under the collar.
I wonder if it could be a device like that that might offer some hope to Windows 10. Also, I mean, did they not say they were also going to run, there was going to be an option for Linux on it?
Yeah, Linux and Android as options.
So
yeah.
you can switch, essentially.
Yeah, you can. Well, I believe so. It's not been detailed exactly yet, but I suspect it's at least an option on purchase, yeah. But well, to have both imagine, running I mean, simultaneously if... would be a little challenging just in terms of memory and footprint. And
oh,
stuff.
Yeah, sure. But I mean, just as an example, say if you could switch out, you know, fast SD cards and have that as the method through which you change the OS. That would be quite a nice idea. And, you know, maybe Windows 10 is an option, right? It does do ARM. So, yeah, that could be pretty cool.
We might talk about that in a bit more detail this weekend. Let's talk about a couple more products before we end. We mentioned the 3310. We did quite a big conversation piece about that, I think either last week or the week before. So we're not going to rehash that. But Nokia did release three other Android phones, and the high-end one basically looks like everything we sort of wanted from Nokia back when they were doing the Lumia phones with Microsoft, which is, you know, what looks like compelling hardware and stock Android, which there's a real gap in the market for that sort of a product right now. And so I sort of almost feel like Nokia in its new guise, run by HMD, who've licensed the brand, they might be onto something. Like, I came away being quite excited about what Nokia's doing.
Yeah, I there's always been that home for Nokia, hasn't there? There's always been that sort of no one quite makes hardware the same. It's not just about quality, because all of the big Android players make high quality devices. It's really about the fact there is something about Nokia phones. Do you remember when that first Nokia was it the 400, the first Windows phone when it came out?
Oh goodness, I remember the first one. I remember was the N8, because I used to call it the Nokia Nate, because it was the one that ran their OS and then got quickly rebadged to be a Lumia, but was sort of renamed. But it was basically the same product, because I had both of them in my cupboard at Wired at the time, and you could kind of forget which one was which.
Well, that first Windows phone, just when you picked it up, I mean, mine broke, annoyingly, which I was really sort of disappointed by. But when you picked that phone up, you were just like, ah, yes, it's a Nokia. And there was something about those phones that is just a step beyond what a lot of other companies do. I don't know what it is. It's almost intangible. Well, it's not just build quality. I think it's material use.
It is.
And
the style is a big part of that. But I mean, they launched the 3 and the 5 at the show. There's another one, the Nokia 6, which I believe was initially released as in Asia, but is now being announced as a kind of a global iteration. And I'm quite excited about them, particularly because they're going to be quite cheap. The Nokia 6, which is, I believe, stock Android but Nokia designed, is going to be just over 200 euros, which makes it potentially a really compelling sort of upper mid-range phone for people who want Android but don't really care about any of the fancy stuff that Samsung and Huawei and LG and Sony try and do on the fringes to differentiate themselves. So we'll keep our eye on that and try and get some in and do a bit of a review. I want to spend just 5 more minutes talking about MWC before we finished, and I don't think it would be fair not to mention BlackBerry, which it released the Key One, which is also manufactured by a different company than originally was. But marketed as a BlackBerry. It's got a keyboard. It's got a touch-sensitive keyboard in that you can swipe your fingers over it like you used to be able to. But it runs Android rather than BlackBerry OS. Ian, on a scale of 1 to 10, how much did you care?
One? It seems unfair. I've never been a BlackBerry user. That's the thing.
Yeah.
But I don't also see what the purpose of this is. I mean, I get it. That keyboards are really nice. I would like to have a phone with a keyboard, especially these days where, I don't know, there's something about predictive text seems to be getting worse, and having a keyboard is nice. I've had phones with keyboards before, like the Motorola that had a fold out, the original Android, the G1.
Yeah.
The Palm Pre. I love the Palm Pre. Such a good keyboard on that phone. And quite a nice device, actually. But it's never stuck. I guess people don't want keyboards, really.
Well, to end up with, we did also get a tease of the Samsung Galaxy S8, which was being revealed on March the 29th, I believe. But it was released unofficially by Evan Blass, who regularly leaks this sort of thing.
And Boy Genius Report as well also had a really comprehensive hands-on with it that they've got from somewhere with some guy with the rattiest nail I've ever seen in my life on.
So we'll get more details about that. But we knew that Samsung wasn't going to be showing the device off. Instead, they showed off a new tablet that looks fine and a couple of other things. But I think largely because of their focus on getting testing and everything right, they're announcing it to be a month later, and it'll probably be released in April, I would imagine.
Yeah, and I think also it's worth bearing in mind that the S8 is probably going to be a lot about software, because they're announcing they're going to do their Bixby AI thing. So they're going to go against Google and Apple and all those other companies doing AI.
Yeah.
So this is the year of AI, isn't it, essentially?
It certainly will be. Well, that's your Ian and Nate text message take on the gadgets of tech. There's a hell of a lot more we could have covered that we didn't have time to get into in 25 minutes, chief among them being 5G and what the telecoms guys are doing. But we'll come to some of that possibly at the weekend if there is a demand for it. And you can let us know, of course, podcast@nateslangson.com. Ian, it's been a pleasure. Thank you, mate. And we will see everybody else in our regular show at the weekend.
Yes.
My business used to be weighed down by the complexities of in-person payments. Then, Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe came along and changed everything. With Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe, I streamlined my payment process effortlessly. Now I can accept in-person, contactless payments right from my iPhone. No extra hardware required. What's truly remarkable is how I can cater to all of my customers' payment preferences, whether they're using cards, Apple Pay, or other digital wallets. Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe ensure a smooth checkout experience every time. And it's not just me. Stripe helps businesses of all sizes, from local markets to global retailers, scale quickly and stay agile. To learn how Tap to Pay on iPhone and Stripe can help grow your revenue and reach, visit stripe.com/tapiphone.